Chapter 9. Repulsion. I have broken 100 oaths, some by design, some by chance, some by misfortune. One of the few I still seek to honour is our pledge to the Mechanicum. No legion can stand without the foundations provided by the exiles of Mars. Conrad Kurz, the Night Haunter, Primarch of the 8th Legion. Talos dragged the body onto the bridge. Zar's armor growled along the decking, the Ceramite grinding every step of the way.
"Leave him,"
Mercutian said. He was bareheaded now, his powerless suit no longer tied into the vox.
"Talos, leave him. We have a battle to fight."
The prophet hauled Zal's body to the side of the chamber, leaving his brother lying by the western doors. When he rose, he took in the sight before him through impassive eyes. The bridge was deep in its usual bustle of noise and organized chaos, with officers and servitors calling back and forth, running between their stations. First Claw, what remained of them, moved to the eastern doors, checking their weapons as they walked. Humans scattered before them, all gestures of respect going ignored. Only Talos lingered by the command throne.
"Why aren't we engaging the enemy ship?"
"You don't want it as plunder once we've beaten these dogs into their graves?"
Sirion voxed back. Talos turned to the oculus, watching the Scarlet Strike cruiser drifting with excruciating patience.
"No," he said, "no. You should have known I would not."
"But we can't board them with every squad engaged."
"Are you insane? I don't want to board them," the prophet said. "I want them to burn."
"They're half a system away, hanging back out of weapons range. They pulled away as soon as they released boarding pods."
Talos looked at his brothers, then at the crew, as if they were deluded beyond comprehension.
"Then chase them!"
As the ship warmed up around them, Sirion cleared his throat.
"You want to destroy that ship, truly?"
The prophet shook his head, not in denial, but confusion.
"Why is that so hard to understand?"
"Because it is hardly the province of pirates to annihilate any reward from their raids."
Sirion looked at the distant ship.
"Think of the ammunition reserves on that cruiser. Think of the thousands of crew, the resources, the weapons we could take as plunder."
"We have all we need on board the Echo. I do not want plunder. I want revenge."
"But..."
Sirion trailed off as Talos watched him for a moment, his face without expression.
"No," the prophet said. "It burns. They die."
The eastern doors opened on dense hydraulics. Varial limped in, his augmetic leg giving off sparks from its locked knee. Blood washed the flayed leathery flags of skin draped across his armor. The symbol of the Corsair's fist was a hammer-broken ruin on his shoulder guard, while the other pauldron showed the Legion's winged skull with blood-stained pride. "Fifth Claw has purged the principal habitation decks," he said. "The Genesis warriors are bleeding us, but the tide is turning." Talos said nothing.
"Zar?"
Varial asked him.
"Dead."
Talos didn't glance at the body. He sat in the command throne, grunting at the pain of his wounds. Combat stimulants were holding off the worst of it, but he needed to get out of his armor soon.
"Take his gene seed later."
"I should harvest it at once," Varial replied.
"Later. That is an order."
He looked over to his brothers, stood in a pack.
"The other claws need Varial. Get to the Hall of Reflection and defend Deltrian at all costs. I will ensure all squads fall back to you once their killing is done."
Sirion stepped forward as if to protest.
"What about you?"
Talos nodded to the oculus.
"I will join you. as soon as I finish this.
The raptor waited at the crater's edge. Deltrian paid the warrior little heed, casting his attention back into the difficulties of multisecting vision. The replacement pylon was being capped by the conduction orb, while the deck crews worked to fuse the tower's electronics to the ship's main systems. Despite the absence of nerves and the resulting lack of pain, Deltrian's wound was a troubling one. He'd leaked precious hemolubricant oils in place of blood, and his minimal organic components were triggering internal alarms along his retinal displays. Worse, the straining organs were now putting increased pressure on his augmetic systems to keep him functional. Time was more of a factor than ever. Thankfully, work was almost complete. Blood crystals clattered gently against his deployed arms as he worked. The fate of Deltrian's ambusher had apparently been an unpleasant one. The body was gone, but crystalline evidence remained, frozen in the void. He could hear Lucorophus fighting again, hear it by the grunts and dull thumps over the vox, but the adept spared the raptor no significant attention. At that moment, the ship gave a colossal tremor beneath his feet. The stars began to turn in the night sky, and Deltrian lost several precious seconds watching the void dance before his eyes. The ship was moving, an attack run, surely. He couldn't envisage a scenario where the Night Lords would run from a smaller vessel, especially not when it had arrived to guard the world they wished to take for themselves.
"This is Deltrian to the Strategium. The shields will be secured within 4 minutes, standard."
"This is Delos," came the crackling reply. "The shields are already active."
"I am aware of that, but they are unsecured due to external pylon damage. They may yet fail again, and the probability rises to a near certainty if kinetic force is a factor. Do not engage until the void generators are at a secure operational capacity. 4 minutes. Acknowledge understanding of this critical proviso with an immediate response."
"Understood, adept. Work fast."
The ship shook around her. Octavia remained in her throne, watching the stars drift by on her wall of picked feed monitors.
"They're running," she said. "The Genesis warship is trying to maintain distance."
Septimus stood next to the throne, his wounds still bandaged, the bruises discoloring his face now at their ripest.
"Should you even be here?" Octavia asked,
unwittingly sounding more like a Terran aristocrat than ever. He ignored the question.
"I don't see how you can tell they're running," he said, his throat tight and his voice scratchy. "It's just a red speck in the blackness."
She didn't lift her eyes from the screens.
"I can just tell."
Several of her attendants bustled on the other side of the fluid pool, guarding the bulkhead door. One of them approached, the footsteps echoing around the humid chamber.
"Mistress!"
Octavia turned to glance at the bandaged, cloaked figure.
"What is it?" "The door is sealed. Word from Fourth Claw promises this deck is safe from intrusion." "Thank you, Volorai."
The figure bowed and moved back to its brethren.
"You are treating them better,"
Septimus pointed out. He knew she still missed Hound. She smiled, patently forced, and looked back to the screens.
"We're catching up, but too slowly. The engines are taking too long to burn hotter. I can almost picture the enemy captain watching us as we watch him, hoping his boarding teams will take our bridge before we reach his ship. And they might, for this chase will take hours, maybe several days."
"Octavia,"
came a bass rumbling voice from the gargoyles carved into the chamber walls. Their wide maws were sculpted to hold vox emitters. She reached to the armrest of her throne and worked the cranking lever. It settled with a crunch.
"I'm here. How is the battle going?"
"Victory will have a high price. I need you to ready the ship for immediate warp entry.
She blinked twice.
What?
The void shields will be secured in 2 minutes. You will jump the ship shortly after. Understood?
But we're in orbit.
We are leaving orbit. You can see that.
But we're so close to the planet. And the enemy isn't even running to the system's warp beacons. They're not going into the Sea of Souls.
There is no time to debate this, Octavia. I am ordering you to engage the warp engines as soon as the void shields are secured.
I'll do it. But what's the destination?
Nowhere.
He sounded impatient now, which she found a rare change.
Jump closer to the enemy. I want to shunt the ship through the Empyrean and ambush the enemy strike cruiser. I am not wasting days chasing these fools across the stars.
She had to blink again.
You're talking about ripping a hole in space to leap through the narrowest slice of the Empyrean. The engines will barely be live before we'll need to kill power to them. It will be a jump of less than a second. And even then we may overshoot by a long way.
I did not say I cared how it was done.
Talos, I'm not sure this can be done.
I did not ask that either. I just want you to do it.
As you wish, she said.
Once she'd worked the lever back, cutting off her vox link to the bridge, Octavia took a deep breath.
This will be interesting.
Construction complete. Deltrian began to retract his augmetic arms, while the servitors fell back into a hear-obey pattern around him.
Orders?
One of them voxed to him.
Follow me!
Deltrian was already moving, his magnetic boots pounding along the hull in silent shivers.
Lucorifus!
The raptor waited at the crater's edge, 3 red helms in his clawed clutch.
You are finished! At last, we must regain immediate access to the ship.
Lucorifus lifted from the decking on a gentle surge of thrust. Gone was the crawling, awkward creature. Out here, freedom altered him into something much more lethal. Guidance thrusters breathed little jets of soundless pressure, keeping him suspended in place.
Why?
Because Talos intends to jump the ship.
That is incorrect terminology,
Lucorifus merely snorted.
It is still happening.
When?
Deltrian didn't stop walking. He strode past the hovering raptor, head down, eye lenses focused on the closest bulkhead set into the ship's skin. It was still over 300 meters away.
Must I truly answer that question with a detailed chain of events? He intends to engage the warp engines as soon as the void shields are secured. I have repaired the final pylon, thus they are secured. Thus, to clarify further, he intends to jump the ship now. Have you ever borne witness to a living organism left unprotected in the warp?
Deltrian could hear something wet over the vox. He suspected it was the raptor's smile.
Oh, yes, tech priest. I most certainly have.
The ship rumbled beneath the adept's boots, building strength and momentum the way a beast draws breath to roar. Deltrian cycled through his epiglottal vox triggers.
Lacuna absolutus.
Your reverence?
Inform me of your location at once.
A spurt of amused code fed back over the link.
Do I detect trace amounts of concern in your query, revered one?
An answer, if you please.
My team is between 16 and 20 seconds' journey from our closest maintenance bulkhead, approximately 600 meters rollward and prowward from your position. I believe the...
His words washed away in a flow of static.
Lacuna absolutus, Finish vocalization.
Static remained the only reply. Hold, Deltrian ordered. The servitors obeyed. Lucoriphus did not. He was already at the next bulkhead, claws gripping at the hull as he keyed in the access cipher.
Lacuna absolutus,
the adept tried again. The white noise continued unabated until Deltrian applied audio filters to the vox channel, scrambling through the chaos. It rendered one sound clearer than all else.
Lucoriphus,
Deltrian said. The raptor hesitated, in the middle of hauling the circular bulkhead door wide open.
What is it?
My subordinate, Lacuna Absolutus, has been engaged. I have deciphered the sound of servitor death across the vox link.
So?
The Night Lord swung the door wide, peeling back the steel to expose the crawl space within. Beneath their boots, the ship gave a premonitory shudder, its engines gaining power.
Build another assistant, or whatever it is you do, to engineer your slaves.
He is...
Deltrian trailed off, feeling the vibration through the ship's bones. They were less than a minute away from entry into the warp.
He is already dead,
Lucoriphus reasoned.
Get inside!
Your reverence,
crackled Lacuna Absolutus's voice over the reconnection.
Astartes!
Logic and emotion warred within the ancient adept. He had several auxiliaries and subordinates, but few were as gifted as Lacuna Absolutus. Few also retained the same sense of personality and drive, which were aspects to be admired, at least when they were blended with efficiency and ambition in that rare mesh of perfect fusion. More than the inconvenience involved in training a replacement, more than the vastly increased workload it would force him to endure, on a small, subtle, and personal level, it would also grieve Deltrian to lose his favored aide. The truth was an awkward one. Affection bred a cold, alien discomfort within his core. In an entity with more flesh to feel with, the sensation might be called a chill.
I will not abandon him!
Deltrian turned and made it 7 steps before he heard Lucoriphus's disgusted sigh.
Get inside!
The raptor soared past him, thrusters trailing ghost fire as he raced over the hull.
I will deal with your lost friend.
Lucoriphus of the bleeding eyes covered the distance in a matter of heartbeats. The hull flashed beneath him in a streaking blur the same color as his armor, while his target stood out in the stark illumination of external siren lights. A single red-armored warrior guarded the maintenance hatch, clearly in the process of entering, when he'd seen the adept's servitor pack approaching. Filthy throne worshippers. It was bad enough having them worming through the ship's bones, let alone having to endure them crawling over the Echo's skin as well. The hull veered beneath him with a slow, serene urgency. Enough of this. He would not be trapped outside when the Echo entered the warp. That was no way for a leader of the Bleeding Eyes cult to meet his end. Lucoriphus turned in the void, angling his dive to bring him down atop the Genesis Space Marine. The warrior reared back, only in time to take both of the raptor's clawed feet in the chest. Lucoriphus gripped with his hands, clutching at the Space Marine's helm, while he kicked with his foot talons, shredding the ceramite breastplate, the subdermal muscle cabling, and the soft flesh beneath. A vicious wrench broke the Space Marine's neck. Lucoriphus felt the muted, popping snaps of the vertebrae giving way, even through the armor that separated him from his prey. The Genesis warrior went slack, still standing straight with his boots maglocked to the hull. Blood left his torn chest in a crystallized cascade. Lucoriphus boosted up, twisting in space to land on the hull, several meters back with his pistol drawn. A single bolt shell hammered into the Space Marine's breastplate, knocking the body from its magnetic perch, sending it tumbling into the nothingness. Only then did Lucoriphus turn to find Lacuna Absolutus. The adept was cowering behind a ridged rise of hull armor, holding a las pistol. The safety settings were still showing as active along the weapon's side. Not that such an insignificant weapon would enjoy much luck against an Imperial Space Marine, even at the best of times.
"Have you never modified yourself for battle?"
Lucorifus asked, reaching for the Adept's throat and hauling him out of hiding.
"Never," the Adept dangled in the warrior's grip. "But after the events of this night, I plan to rectify that failing."
"Just get inside," the raptor growled.
"Tell me that worked,"
Talos said to his crew. While Octavia was heaving her guts up after the jump, purging the liquefied contents of her stomach, and while the warband's claws were at last forming together to isolate and slay the final remnants of the enemy boarding parties, the Echo of Damnation trembled with the pressures of returning to real space. The warship burst back into reality, streaming the migraine-colored unsmoke of the deep ether from its spinal battlements, after what was assuredly the shortest warp jump in Legion history. The engines had flickered live for less than a single second, ripping a rift in the void at the vessel's prow. Even as the Echo's entrance rip was sealing, another opened tens of thousands of kilometers away, disgorging the warship back into space. No warp transit came without cost, but neither did the laws of logic apply when rushing through the hell behind the veil. A short flight was no guarantee of safety, and the ship's emergence mere heartbeats after entry still left it juddering, its Geller field made visible by the clinging pollutant mists. The shaking bridge had the added rattling melody of chains clashing together as they dangled from the ceiling. The Night Lords occasionally used them to hang bodies. Reuven wasn't the only decoration.
"Speak to me," Talos ordered.
"Systems realigning," one of the bridge officers called back. "Auspex live. It's worked, Lord, with 1,300 kil..."
"Come about," interrupted the Prophet. "I want that cruiser dead."
"Coming about, sire," called the helm's mistress.
The gravitic generators whined at the strain as the ship banked hard, and the Oculus reactivated with a blast of static, resolving into a view of the distant red warship. Talos sped a glance for the hololithic display, still scrambled and showing little of worth. They were too far ahead for any of their weapons to reach yet. Still, it was an improvement over lagging so far behind. He had another idea, one that would work now.
"All power to the engines."
"All power, aye."
The Master of Propulsion reached for his voxcaster, dialing the code for his subordinates on the Enginarium control deck.
"All power to the engines," the veteran officer said into the speech horn. "We need every one of the reactors burning like a sun's core. Don't spare the slaves."
Seven replies overlapped into one mess of agreement. Not all of the voices were human. The Echo of Damnation kicked forward, tearing through space in pursuit of its prey. Talos knew he wasn't a void warrior. He lacked the Exalted's patience, and he was a self-confessed creature of sensation. He waged war with a blade in his hand and blood on his face. The salty reek of an enemy's fierce sweat in his senses focused him, spurring him on. Void warfare required a measure of tolerance he'd never acquired. He knew it, and didn't berate himself for the deficiency. One couldn't be an expert at all things. To that end, Talos spared no time after taking the Echo, almost immediately investing a great deal of trust in his mortal crew. Some of them were survivors from the Covenant of Blood. Others were veterans of the Red Corsair's fleet. When they spoke, he listened. When they advised, he considered their words. When he acted, it was with their counsel. But patience had its limit. One brother had already died this day. Another look at the resolving hololithic spoke of the shortening distance between the runes denoting both ships.
"We will catch them," Talos said.
"They're running for the system's jump, Lucas,"
the Master of Auspex called out. Talos turned to the hunchbacked former Corsair slave. The eight-bladed star blackened his face in a vicious burn marking.
I do not believe they are. They are running to hide, not to flee.
He ordered the oculus to pan across the expanse of space, finally resting its gaze on a distant moon.
There, Talos said. They seek to purchase time, pulling further away from us to hide on the other side of that rock. They need only wait long enough for their boarding parties to take control of the ship, or for confirmation that the assault has failed. Then they can return or flee, whichever they deem necessary.
The Master of Auspex was working his multi-jointed fingers along the clicking console keys. Each brass button clacked like some ancient typing machine.
You may be correct, Lord. Before the warp jump, such a maneuver would have bought them approximately 7 hours.
Talos felt his gaze drawn to Zal again. He resisted it, knowing his brother would still be slouched against the wall. Nothing could be gained by staring at his corpse.
And now? He asked.
The robed officer scratched at the weeping sores that marked the edge of his lips.
We will catch them in perhaps 2 hours.
Better. Not good, but at least it was better. Still a discomforting thought gnawed at him. Talos mused aloud.
What if they realize their assault has failed beyond recovery?
The robed man drew in a sticky breath.
Then we will not catch them. The warp jump gave us a chance at an honest engagement. No more, Lord, no less.
Talos watched the ship running for respite, burning its engines hot as it made for the temporary sanctuary offered by the dead rock planetoid. It didn't matter. His idea would work.
Nostromo, he whispered.
Memory and imagination bred a fire in his dark eyes, though it was lost behind the skullish faceplate and slanted red eye lenses.
Sire?
The prophet took several moments to answer.
Let them run. We are close enough now for the shriek to work. Pursue, but let them reach orbit on the other side of that rock. Let them come close to it, believing they can buy a few more hours. My lord?
Talos gestured to the Vox Mistress.
Find Deltrian, if you please.
The officer, heavily augmented, her remaining flesh pitted by acid scars, worked her console and nodded a moment later.
Ready, sire?
This is Talos to Deltrian. You have 10 minutes to activate the shriek. It is time we won this fight.
When it came, the tech adept's reply was overridden by Lucorifus's husky drawl.
We are in the starboard terminus arc. It will take us 10 minutes to even reach the adept's chambers.
Then move swiftly.
Talos gestured for the Vox Mistress to terminate the link and released a heavy breath.
Master of Arms.
The officer looked up from his console, his sleek and elegant uniform faded by time.
My lord?
Ready cyclonic torpedoes,
the Night Lord ordered.
Lord?
Was the stunned reply.
Ready cyclonic torpedoes,
he repeated in exactly the same tone.
Lord, we only have 5 warheads.
Talos swallowed, clenching his teeth and closing his eyes as if he could contain his anger by sealing the portals of his face.
Ready cyclonic torpedoes.
Sire, I believe we should save them for...
The human said nothing more. The front of his face came free with a sickly crack, the flesh and jagged bone crunching in the Night Lord's fist. Talos ignored the body as it toppled, spilling the insides of its halved skull onto the decking. No one had even seen him move. Such was the prophet's speed, clearing 10 meters and vaulting a console table in the time it took a human heart to beat once.
I am trying to be reasonable,
he said to the hundreds of watching crew members. His Vox voice carried across the chamber in a guttural, malign whisper.
I am trying to end this battle so that we might all return to our insignificant lives, still wearing our skin around our souls. I am not by nature a choleric creature. I allow you to speak, to advise, but do not see my indulgence as weakness. When I order, you will obey. Please do not try my patience this night. You will regret it, as Armsmaster Sujev is so aptly demonstrating.
The body at Talos's feet was still twitching, still leaking. The Prophet handed his fistful of bloody facial wreckage to the nearest servitor.
Dispose of this.
The servitor watched him with dead-eyed devotion.
How, my lord?
It asked in a monotone murmur.
Eat it, for all I care.
The Prophet stalked back to his throne, tracking through the organic filth running from Sujev's corpse. All the while he resisted the need to cradle his aching head in his hands. Something inside his mind threatened to break out, shattering his skull with the strain.
The gene seed is killing you. Some humans are not meant to survive implantation.
He looked up, where Reuven's remains hung on rusting chains.
I killed you, he told the bones.
Sire? Asked a nearby officer. Talos looked over at the man. Mutation had ruined him, leaving one side of his body seized and muscle-locked, giving his face the perpetual leer of a stroke victim. He wiped his drooling, stretched lips on the back of his hand, frozen as it was into a half-claw.
Is this what we have fallen to? The Prophet wondered.
Nothing, said Talos. All stations ready for deployment of cyclonic torpedoes. When the shriek is live and our torpedoes cannot be intercepted or tracked,
destroy the moon.